as kohanim ulevi'im shalom mishmor, in other words, who belonged to that particular watch, hoyu oilim b'Yerushalayim, they would go up and be in Yerushalayim, kohanim la'avodo, the kohanim in order to perform the sacrificial service, ulevi'im l'shir, and the Levites in order to participate in what is called the shir, in other words, the singing of the psalms and the playing of the musical instruments, whatever their assignment was. ומכל המעמודות היו קבועים בירושלים לעמוד על קורבן הבכורה. And from every ma'amod, he says, there were those who were permanently stationed in Yerushalayim. This seems to be Rashi's implication, that they had permanent representatives over there in order that they should be present when the sacrifice was brought by their brethren. And how about those who couldn't go up? So, Bahashor, Hayu Miskansin Lorehim, right? The others would gather in their own cities, Umispalalin al Korban Achehem, and they would pray that in connection with the Korban that their brethren would bring, Sheis Kabil Barotzon, that the sacrifice should be accepted by God. Umis Anin, and they had a fast. We'll see that they didn't fast all 7 days, obviously. But they did fast 4 out of the 7, as we'll discover. Umotziyin Sefer Torah b'yom tanisim, and on the day when they fasted, they would take out a Sefer Torah. V'korin b'maaseh bereishis, and they would read the first chapter, the chapter that deals with the creation of the world. The Gemara Meforishama, and the Gemara will tell you why they particularly chose that. Okay, we didn't get to it yet. So some things we'll just have to postpone for the time being, all right? Getting back to our text on the Mishnah now.
So you mean at the time of the temple, there was they had written Torahs then?
Oh, of course, absolutely. First of all, that there were copies of the Torah available even at an earlier time, this we know. Very dramatic incident that happened, of course, in the days of King Yoshiyahu, if you remember, that the high priest Chilkiah found a Sefer Torah in the Beis Hamikdash that had been neglected. People had forgotten about it, so he found it, and they started to read. And when Yoshiyahu heard, what he should have been observing, and what the people of Israel should have been observing instead of the lackadaisical business that was going on. So, he proclaimed that the people should fast and so on and cleanse themselves from all the Avodah Zarah and everything else. So, that we know. But according to tradition, the Sefer Torah already existed even earlier. First of all, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write a Sefer Torah, right?
Yeah.
At the end, just before Parsha Hazinu, he's told, Atem Kisvulchem Sashir Hazos, right? And in Vayelech, Parsha Vayelech, it's written over there that he has to write the Sefer Torah. Okay.
Which he did.
Yeah, right. And of course, obviously, he must have given it over to Yeshua. And in turn, there was a copy of the Torah.
Made, yeah.
But as a result of Golas Bavel, people may have forgotten about it. So that therefore, it was Ezra HaSofer, who after they returned back from the Golas Bavel, when they returned to Eretz Yisrael, he had to again teach the Torah, read the Torah in public, and have people, pledge allegiance, so to speak, that they would observe the words of the Torah. Okay? And this is why he was called Ezra HaSofer, because he actually wrote the Sefer Torah.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Sofer, he was
but
a scribe.
Really,
right.
Actually, it was something that he had learned.
Yeah.
By heart.
Yes, he had the tradition. We have a Gemara that says, that if it weren't for Ezra, the Torah might have been forgotten by the people of Israel. But, he was the one who caused the Torah again to be the living source of inspiration for the entire people. All right. Now, what's in the brackets explains about the fasting. The reason why it's in brackets is because there are some who feel that it's a little bit extraneous over here. Okay? All right. But at any rate, all the texts have it, and we're going to learn it. It says, V'anshei ha'mamod, says that the people of the Ma'amud, they would fast 4 days during the course of the week, miyom beis viad yom chamishi, from Monday until Thursday. In other words, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, they had to fast.
The four consecutive days?
4 consecutive days, correct.
So they ate at night or what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at night.
In other words, they had to fast from before daybreak until sunset, right? But after that, you know, at night they would break the fast and fortify themselves in order to fast the next day again. So,
yeah. Like Muslims.
Ramadan. Okay.
That's the way they fast.
Yeah, that's the way they observe Ramadan, right? That they don't eat, you know, from morning until the evening, but as soon as the sun goes down, boom, they shoot off a cannon, they try to get to stuff themselves as much as they can.
Good lamb.
Yeah.
Okay, so Yom Chamishi.
Yeah. Okay. So, the Yom HaRishon. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I didn't finish what's in the parentheses.
Okay.
All right. So, the 4 days during the week that they fasted were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Although Hoyum is son in Erev Shabbos, they did not fast, however, Erev Shabbos, Yipnei Kvod HaShabbos, in honor of the Shabbos, Velo B'Echad the Shabbos, nor on Sunday. Kedei Shelo Yetzim Minucha, the Oneg, so that they should not proceed from rest and enjoyment, namely of the Shabbos, right, the Giyo, to toil, literally, the Ta'anis, the Omusu, literally, right, that they would die. In other words, it would come as a shock to them that after having eaten and enjoyed Shabbos, immediately it's followed by
fast.
Right. Of course, that applied to them. It doesn't apply to us. As we know, we have a different problem as far as fast days are concerned. Okay? We have only one fast during the course of a year which can fall on a Friday. Can, doesn't mean that necessarily will, but it can. And what fast day is that?
Easter?
No.
Kippur. No.
On a Friday? No. The only one can be Asura B'Tavis. That's the only fast that may occur on a Friday. Last year it happened, for example. Not this past, you know, not recently, no, but the previous one. That it happened, that it was on Friday. So we fast on Friday, even though here it says not to, but we do. All the other fasts, however, we never fast on Friday. As for example, if, let's say, theoretically, you had, you know, let's say the Tanis Bechorim, let's say that you had Pesach beginning on Shabbos, okay? So, theoretically, then, the Bechorim should fast on Friday, right? We don't observe that. What do? We have them fast on Thursday. Prior to that. Of course, afterwards, you make a seum anyway, and so on. But I'm talking about in theory. So, in that case, we have it earlier, okay? What happens in the case of Shiva Sabatamas? Tisha B'Av, what do you do if those happens to be on Shabbos? Are we allowed to fast on Shabbos? Of course not. So what do we do? So we postpone it till Sunday. So in that case, it's okay.
But Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos.
Yom Kippur, the fast of Yom Kippur supersedes Shabbos. Right. Because that already is proclaimed by the Torah. The others are not Torah fasts. You understand? We would say it's B'divrei Sofrim. In other words, the people, the Anshtegs, Hakatola, or the Nevi'im Mishonim, and so on and so forth. But it doesn't have quite the same authority as if it came, you know, the Torah specifically said it. Yeah.
Like next year it falls on Shabbos.
Yeah.
What is Yom Kippur.
But here, this was their practice, okay? That in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when they would fast on these days, but they made sure not to fast on either Friday or on Sunday because of the honor of Shabbos.
Right.
Okay.
You know, this 95, I thought it fell on Labor Day. No, it falls on Shabbat. Probably fell Labor Day. The reason I know it's my birthday.
Oh.
And it coincides with my English birthday.
Uh-huh.
Your birthday is on Yom Kippur? You were born on Yom Kippur? You were circumcised on Yom Kippur too?
No.
Although, by the way, it's permissible.
Yeah. I know it's permissible. But 8 days later you were.
No, this coming year.
Then you were.
Am I looking ahead? Yeah.
You were circumcised in Sukkot then?
What is it?
Had to be Sukkot 8 days later.
No.
Right?
5755.
In the Sukkot.
That's this coming year, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, what we were talking about. Now, Bayom Rishon, now we're talking about what did they read in the Torah. So, on Sunday, they read Bereishis and Yehi Rokia. In other words, the first two paragraphs of Bereishis, okay? B'Sheni, on Monday, they read Yehi Rokia and Yikavamayim. In other words, they repeated the second one that had been read, and then they read one additional one, okay? Bashlishi, they read Yikavu Hamayim, which is, you know, what occurs on the third day, and they also continued reading the Yehima Oros, right, which is, of course, you know, what happened on the fourth day, right? Boravi, on Wednesday, so they read Yehima Oros, the Yishvatsu Hamayim, which is, you know, what describes what happened on the fifth day. Bachamishi, on Thursday, they read Yishvatsu Hamayim, and Totsei HaOretz, which is the description of what happened on the sixth day, right? Bashishi, on Friday, they would read Vatotzei Ha'oretz, right? In other words, really, it's the second part of that, and then Vayichulu Hashemayim, okay? All right, now, at any rate, this was the rule also. Parsha Gedola Korinoso Bishnayim V'Haktana B'Yochim. They had to call three people for Elias, okay? So, the larger parsha, the larger, you know, group of psukim, they divided into two, Koronosa Bishnayim, right? The Haktana, and the smaller one, they did Biyomim. Okay. So,
Biyomim means by themselves.
Singular.
One person.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay,
but I don't understand. They didn't fast on the sixth day, so why are they reading the Torah?
They're still reading the Torah every day. That's the point.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Why Rashi made the point that, you know, they fast and read the Torah. Okay, because he wanted to stress about the idea of the fasting part. Okay?
But I mean, they used to read
actually,
the Torah every day.
They read it every day, right. And, you know, because after all, for every day there is a selection, you know, appropriate to the day. Okay? All right. So they would split it up, two for one section and one for the other. And that's the way they went, okay?
Shabbos. Mm-hmm,
they don't mention about what happened on Shabbos over here. Why don't they mention what happened on Shabbos over here? Because I have to assume that, you know, that already was subject to the other rule as far as the reading of the Torah is concerned. Namely, that every week you have to read, you know, from where you left off the previous week. And that rule applied to the Beis HaMikdash as much as applied to every synagogue throughout the world, you see. Here I'm not getting into the problem about did they do it in 3 years or did they do it in 1 year. As I told you, this business that the Reform started and the conservative dancing after, you know, to split it up and call it a triennial cycle. But in reality, it's not a triennial cycle. It's not the original triennial cycle.
They don't read consistently. They don't read continuously.
Correct. I mean, they skip and skip. Every week they're skipping. Right, exactly. Right.
They read till Shalishi, and then they go to Hamishi later on, and they go to...
Which they don't in practice, too.
No.
That's the point. Not even over the course of the second and the third year, they forget where they don't maintain a record of where they left off and continue from there. They'll often read the same portion.
They don't mark the scroll?
No.
Not even the magic marker.
No.
They
underline it.
Maybe the rabbi should have ultraviolet eyeglasses or something. They able to see the magic marks. Okay.
The Shacharis?
Yeah. The Shachris, the Musav of Mincha, right? Whether it was the Shachris service or the Musav service or the Mincha service, Nichnosen the Kohen al Pihen. So they would, excuse me, I have to read a little differently. All right. The Shachris, the Musav of Mincha, Nichnosen, right?
Right.
They would enter. The Kohen al Pihen, Ke Kohen es Shema. Now, the question is, what does this phrase belong to? Is it to be confined only to Mincha? Because the implication here is that they would read it by heart, just as people read the Shema Yisrael. They didn't have Siddurim in those days. Okay? So people, of course, had memorized these passages, and the implication is that they read it by. But obviously, as far as Shachris is concerned, and maybe even as far as Musaf is concerned, but then of course we'll have another question, what do they mean by Musaf?
No.
Okay? Because how many days have Musaf? We don't have it, right?
No.
So, at any rate, more likely then they read, you know, from a Sefer Torah, because after all, how could we say that they divided up the reading of the Torah two for one paragraph and one for another if they didn't do it
with the Torah
from a Torah text, right? It had to be from a Torah scroll, okay? But then what does this refer to? So the chances are it's the Mincha that they're talking about, where they didn't take out the Sefer Torah at Mincha time, but instead they would recite the passage, you know, by heart, just as you know, you recite the Shema. This would seem to be the implication over here. Now, Erev Shabbos b'mincha. So, Erev Shabbos at mincha time, in other words, Friday afternoon, lo hayu nichnosim b'pnei kvod haShabbos. They did not gather then into the Beis HaMikdash in honor of the Shabbos. In other words, everybody had to get ready, you know, take your shower and, you know, get dressed and so on and so forth. And the Shabbos
put on
the clothes and so on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Kol yom sheyesh bo halel, ein ma'amod v'shachris. On those days when halel is recited, then they would not have a ma'amod at shachris. Okay?
What do you mean?
What?
I'm not sure what you mean, they wouldn't have a ma'amod at shachris.
Means that for the morning one, they didn't.
They didn't do the laying?
They did not. They didn't stand around and so on and so forth. Others, the implication would be that they didn't fast and they didn't and that they didn't have, you know, these special prayers.
So we're
okay.
Talking about the Ma'amados.
We're talking about the Ma'amod, exactly.
So when there was no when. Okay.
So when it was a day upon which they recited Hallel, right? So in that particular case, there was no Ma'amod at Shachris. Okay.
Okay. But why would that be? I have the same question.
Well, this is still the Mishnah. They'll get to it. This is the Mishnah. They'll tell us, I hope.
Okay. Fine. Well, eventually we'll learn the answer to that. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No Mohammed service. There was no Mohammed service at Shachris.
Korban Musaf, on those days in which they sacrificed an additional offering. So, Ein Ben Elah. Then, in that time, there was no special Mohammed service at Nila time, okay? Korban Eitzim, on those days in which they brought the wood for the, you know, the altar, and it was donated as literally as a sacrifice of wood. Doesn't mean that they burnt it all at that time, but
it
means
came from their Mishmar.
Right. So Ein B'Mincha. Then at that time there was no Ma'amud at Mincha time. This is Divrei Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Omalo Ben Azai. So Ben Azai said to him, Kachoya Rabbi Yeshua Shonet. Rabbi Yeshua would teach us the following, he said. Korban Musaf, Ein B'Mincha. When they would bring a sacrifice of Musaf, then they did not have a Ma'amud at Mincha. Korban Eitzim, when they brought the wood, then Ein B'Ne'ilam. So, what happened? So, Chosar Rabbi Akiva, the Yoshenek Ben Azai. So, Rabbi Akiva changed his mind, and he said, okay, I accept, you know, the opinion of Ben Azai, that this is the procedure. All right, let's take a look right now at Rashi again, okay? So we'll do a little bit more Rashi, and won't do us any harm to learn how to read Rashi.
where did we read that?
All right. We are ready to Bayom HaRishon. You see that?
Yeah.
Bayom HaRishon. Yeah, well. So it says Shel Shabbat, the first day of the week. In other words, what we call Sunday.
Oh, okay. Bayom HaRishon.
Yeah. So Korim Bereshis, etc. Right? So it says Parsha Rishono.
Right.
In other words, the first section of Bereshis. Parsha Sihirokia. And also, you know, what is the second section over there? By the way, the word Parsha over here is not what we call a Sedra or a Parsha. They use the word Parsha in the sense of a section of Torah, okay? But the idea, you know, like we divide, let's say, Bereshis into 12 Parshas, this they didn't do in those days, okay? Mm. So we have to understand what is the wording, you know, that they're using over here.
So it's possible when they read the Torah, they didn't read it in the same sequence as we do today.
Well, we know that we eventually
adopted
the Babylonian system of completing it within a year's time, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, the custom was to do it over a course of 3 years.
Also,
okay.
So I think so. We had this discussion at this one time. They also would maybe do it in a more logical manner. For example, the story about Yosef, instead of spreading it over three parshiot, might do it more in one reading.
That is quite possible because of the fact that, generally speaking, the parshiot were based upon, and you know, what I mentioned before, namely, where do we have, let's say, a break between one section and another section,
and
so on. All right. Now, why did they read, however, on Sunday both Parsha Rishona and Parsha, and you know, the one that belonged to the second day? This is what Rashi is explaining. So he says, "The fishaim be Parshas Bereishis levado tes psukim, k'day kriyas kohen Levi Yisrael v'chein kulam." The reason being that you don't have enough psukim. You need a minimum of at least 9 psukim if you're going to divide it. 3 for a Kohen, 3 for a Levi, and 3 for Yisrael. So you have to have a minimum of 9 psukim. And obviously, in none of these paragraphs in Bereishis do you have 9 psukim. Okay? Bashishi, on Friday, it says, Vatotse ho'oretz ad vayechulu. Okay? From Vatotse ho'oretz up to vayechulu, he says, the fish of a parshas totse ho'oretz ein bo elishmona psukim. It has only 8. So therefore, the picha, for that reason, Oime Vayechulu, you have to say Vayechulu, even though it's Friday and it's not Shabbos, okay? Parsha Gedola, he says, Sheba Parshios, the larger ones, so the Parshios Halolo in these different Parshios, Koirin Oiso Bishnai. They would read it among two people. In other words, they divide it among two. Kigon, for example, Parsha Rishon Sheba Reishis, Yesh Bo Chamisha Psukim. It has only 5 psukim, all right? So Hoyu Koren Osa Bishnayim, right? They would read it for 2 people. Of course, that's going to create another problem, because you can understand what is the problem going to be. How do you break it up? How can you get 6 out of 5?
Don't you go back and re-?
Well, that's one opinion, right? That happens to be one opinion.
You go back.
It happens
to
be Rob's opinion.
You repeat
Rob says that that's what you do. We have to repeat the pasuk.
Right.
Yeah. Just as we do with Rosh Chodesh for the same reason.
Right.
Because we don't have enough psukim in order to, you know, three and three and three.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So here comes the Shabbos. I'm reading the Gemara. As we say in the Gemara, Yehi Rokia. The Echod, that Yehi Rokia was read by one of the Yom HaSheni, Yehi Rokia be Echod, Yikovu Hamayim, Sheyesh Bo Hei Psukim, Be Yom HaShlishi, Yikovu Be Echod, and so on, so Vashem Bo Elo Hei Psukim, these all have only 5 Psukim, then Yehi Ma'oros Bishnayim, that you can break up into 2, but Sheyesh Bo Vav Psukim, it has 6 verses, and so on. Alright, then, we learned, the Koren Osa Al Pihen, it says, Kol Echod Bifnei Atzmo, so everyone, you know, read it for himself. He said these psukim. Avoy be Gemara, so Gemara is the one to ask the question. Maiko Omar mi Korah, Katani Parsha Katana, and so on and so forth. So the mashma, the Besefer Torah Korin, right? The implication is that they read it from the Sefer Torah. How could you say, you know, that they did it by heart. So he says, "V'hadar tonal pihem," right? And afterwards, in other words, after the people had heard the reading from the Torah, so then they knew how to do it, you know, by heart. This is what Rashi is implying over here, right?
Well, they'd heard it twice that day. Once.
Yeah, right. What we said in the morning, right? Yeah. And then again in the afternoon, mm-hmm. right? And then he says, "Parsha b'ne'ilah lekah," but at the ne'ilah time there was no reading of the Torah. They didn't do it. Okay. All right. Well, shall we continue a little bit longer? Let me see how far we have over here. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll go down to the second line from the bottom, and then we'll finish the rest next week and continue. Okay? Because it's a long one, and it's on. All right. Well, so I'm getting a little bit tired.
Okay. We'll go back to the text.
Yeah. Alright. Zman atzei kohanim v'ha'om. Now, when was the time that wood was brought as a sacrifice? That is, we call it the korban etzim. In other words, people would bring wood to the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, kohanim v'ha'om, both kohanim and the people. In other words, again, there were different families who were assigned. Okay? Zman atzei kohanim v'ha'om tisha. Excuse me, I have to read a little differently. All right. Right. What it means is that there were nine times during the course of the year. This is what, you know, if the Mishnah sometimes would put it in modern Hebrew, so it would say tisha pavim b'shana, something like that. But it doesn't say that, so you have to work out, you know, what is the Mishnah saying over here. Okay? So what he's saying is that Zman atzei kohanim v'ha'om, in other words, how many times were set aside, you know, for wood to be brought by the Kohanim and the people? It says Tisha. There were nine such occasions during the year. B'yechod b'Nisan, on the first day of Nisan, b'nei Arach ben Yehuda. Then the sons, the descendants of Arach ben Yehuda, they would bring their korban. By the way, this is based essentially upon what we find in the book of Nehemiah. Okay?
Okay.
But, you know, when they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash and so on, so naturally it was necessary to set up an order for all these things. So that this is where we have the source for this, okay? So that was the day that Orach ben Yehuda was, you know, he brought. The Esrim b'Tammuz, on the 20th day of Tammuz, presumably, by the way, they brought enough firewood in order to last
right until that point.
Right. All right, on the 20th of Tammuz, then it was B'nai David ben Yehuda. It was the descendants of King David, of the tribe of Yehuda. V'chamisha b'av, on the fifth day of Av, b'nei Parosh ben Yehuda. It was the descendants of Parosh, of the tribe of Yehuda. V'shiva bo, on the seventh of Av. Notice over here, it's really they're crowding it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't
b'nei yo, well, obviously some gave more, some gave less, I have to say, I assume, so, okay?
Yeah.
It was b'nei Yonadav ben Rechab. Descendants of Yonadab ben Rechet. Ba'asorabo, on the 10th day of Av, it was B'nai Sanoa ben Binyamin. Okay? Ba'chami, who came from the tribe of Binyamin. Ba'chamisha Osabo, on the 15th of Av, B'nai Zatu ben Yehud. Then it was the descendants of Zatu who came from the tribe of Yehuda. The Imohem, and together with them, were Kohanim Ulevim, who would bring, you know, presumably, at the time that the family in charge gave firewood, so, you know, they would also bring Kohanim and Levim, so in order to participate in the Simcha, in the ceremonies and so on. Maybe the others also gave. I mean, they would bring their own
Korban
Etzim, but officially it was the donation of the others. Okay. V'chol mi shetor b'shivto. And anyone who was not certain as to what tribe he belonged to, so if he wanted to bring Korban Etzim, he would bring it on what day? On the 15th day of Av. Of course, this is part of the reason why the 15th day of Av became celebrated as a holiday. But it's only one of the reasons, as we'll discover, there were other reasons as well. Okay? So if you weren't sure, you knew that you belonged and that your family was among those who gave to the Beis HaMikdash, but you didn't remember which one and when it was to be, so on the 15th of Av, that was the day that they could all join in.
They say ta'a b'shivto,
right.
They're only referring this grouping like B'nai Orach, Ben Yehuda.
Right, right. They didn't know which group he belonged to.
Somebody didn't know whether he was from Naphtali or Dan. Mm.
Correct. Right.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we'll have that a little later. You know, why other reasons for the celebration on the 15th of August.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in addition to them, there's also B'nai Gonvi Ali, which means those who smuggled in the pestle that they use in order to hack a mortar, you know. U'v'nei kotzei ketzios, and those who were cutting down figs.
Figs.
Yeah, okay. We'll discover why they were called these people. It's a dramatic incident.
These are people that smuggled in leaves and cut down fig trees?
Okay.
Smuggled pestle.
I'll tell you right now what it's
all about. A pestle. Pestle is the thing you grind in the mortar.
The Roman government prohibited Jews from going to Yerushalayim in order to go and to celebrate these different things.
Uh-huh.
So they smuggled in these things. They said, look, we're not bringing any korban or anything like that. We're only bringing, you see, this. I have a mill, or I have a mortar or something, you know, that I require a pestle for. That I have to hack. Okay? Or these, I mean, fig trees. Whoever heard of bringing, you know, branches of fig trees to Yerushalayim and so on? I mean, they could have used it, you know, for building sukkahs and so on. But, but the Roman authorities could figure, what kind of sacrifices? Those sacrifices involved over here. So they let them continue on to Yerushalayim. So the day that they celebrated was also the 15th of Av. That was their celebration day. Okay? B'Esrimbo, on the 20th day of Av, B'nai Pachas, Moab, Ben Yehuda. Then there was the descendants of Pachas Moab, which would mean literally the governor of Moab, who was of the tribe of Judah. B'Esrim B'Elul, on the 20th day of Elul, it was B'nai Adin Ben Yehuda. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. B'Echod B'Teves, Shebo, on the first day of Teves, so on it was B'nai Parosh. Shania, the second,
this is the second of Teves, then.
Yeah, that would be the second day of Teves. And then, they were on the second one. The reason why I'm hesitating for a moment is because it looks like Shnia B'Echa, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You have to read it as B'nai Parosh Shnia, okay? Mm-hmm. See, you guys, you probably have punctuation. There's no punctuation over here in the Gemara, though, okay? So it was the sons of Parosh who brought it on the second day. Now, what he's saying is over here is that the Echod the Teves, on the first day of Teves, Lo Hoyabo Mamot. There was no Mamot on that day.
Okay? Elvis B'nai Adin.
Right. B'nai Adin Ben Yehuda. Right. The Echod the Teves,
Shebo.
So it's B'nai Parosh.
They also did.
Then Shnia, what is Shnia?
Well, because Shnia
means the second one, on the second day.
The fifth of Av was in the family of Parosh.
Excuse me.
See?
Yeah.
Oh, so B'nai
Adin Ben Yehuda
is
B'Echa B'Teves.
Oh, I've got it, right.
And Shebo, right? And then B'nai Parosh Shnia. They would bring it on the next day, on the second, okay? And then he continues by saying, B'Echa B'Teves Lo Hoyabo Ma'amad. On the first day of Teves, there was no Ma'amad on that day. Why? Shehoyabo Halil, the Korban Musa, the Korban Esim, because they had so many different ceremonies that they had to conduct in the Beis HaMikdash that there was no time for a Mamot. That's what he's implying, okay? All right, we'll just finish with the Rashi over here, and then we'll call it a night, okay? Next week we'll continue, because the next deal with things that happened on Shivas HaBetamis and what happened on Tisha B'Av and on the 15th day of Av. So with that, you know, the Mishnah to the first to the fourth chapter concludes, and then we'll get started on the Gemara. All right, but let's finish the Rashi over here, okay?
Yeah.
All right. It says, Kol Yom Sheyesh Bo Halil. Do you see where it is? Kol Yom Sheyesh Bo Halil.
Oh, yes, yeah,
okay. It says, Kol Yom Sheyesh Bo Halil, any day upon which they recited Halil, Ein Bo Ma'amod Shachas. Then they did not have a Ma'amod at Shachas. It says, Osan Shehoi Bu Shalayim, those people, it refers to those who were in Yerushalayim, Lo hayim is paladin al korban achayim. They didn't stand by to pray that sacrifice should be, acceptable. Why? Because sheyesh bo halil. It's a day in which halil has to be cited. Lefi she'ein lehem p'nai la'asos ma'amodim. They don't have time to make this ma'amod business. She'kor nesahil, because they're reading the halil. Or mipnei ha'halil, so that therefore on those days upon which halil were recited, ho'yudoch nesamamod, and you didn't have the ma'amod. But of course that would refer when? To the morning. It wouldn't apply to what? To mincha. Mincha they would have it, okay?
Right.
On those days in which you had korban musaf, Yom Shabbat, you know, Sheyesh Bo Korban Musaf, so be Yerushalayim, Ein Ma'amod, and Yerushalayim did not have a Ma'amod, right? Bin Ila be Yerushalayim, at the Nila, you know, at the Nila time Yerushalayim. The Kosh came be Mincha, Asmukhala Misaf, and certainly all the more so that they didn't have a Ma'amod in Mincha because that's right on the heels of Musaf, right? Why? The fish had through them the Musaf. They were so busy with the Musaf sacrifice that they, you know, they had no time for additional prayer services. Okay? Sheyesh bo lahakriv behemos yosel mitomim, because on the days in which they had to sacrifice, you know, a Musaf, you had many more animals than you would have for the tomim, because the tomim shu echod, right? That's only one animal is involved, one in the morning, as we said, and one in mincha, right? So, ein lechol musaf below shtei behemos. There is no musaf which had less than two behemos. But as we pointed out, you know, of course, that was on Shabbos that they had. Shtei kvosim neshonot tamimim, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, Rosh Hashanah, you had par and ayol and soyir and so on. So you had already at least three behemos and so on. And many more, actually, right? The Shivas Kvasim, Neshonot, etc., etc., and on the Yom Tevim, you know, that they had all kinds. So they were busy with the sacrifices. The Loyalim Panai, Klal, and they had no time. Sha'akohanim, Shal Ma'amud, Terudim, the Musaf, because the Kohanim of that particular Ma'amud, they were so busy with the sacrifices of the Musaf, all these additional sacrifices. The Yisrael Shabahan, Hoya Terudim, Lachtavetim. Hey, and you think that the you know, the ordinary Israelites got off scot-free? You know what they had to do?
They chop wood.
Yeah, they were busy, he said. They had to chop wood to put on the altar, right? The leash of mayim, and to draw water, you know, bring water. And as a result, not only did it, you know, did it push aside, so to speak, you know, the mama that they would have had, let's say, at Musaf time, but also that applies also to mincha and to nila. Alright, then we learn on the days in which there was Korban Eitzim, so he says, B'gemara Meforish. The Gemara will explain this. Kigon Echom and Testimonim. We're talking about one of these nine times that was mentioned over here in the Mishnah, right? V'yosa Yom Shehoyebo Korban Eitzim, on those days in which they brought the wood, so Afilu Lohoyebo Musaf, Hoyenitchem Amod. And even though there was no Musaf on that day, Hoyenitchem Amod Shomincha. Then the Ma'amud at the Mincha time also was pushed aside. Bipnei Korban Eitzim, because they were busy with the bringing of the wood. Bipnei Shekorban Eitzim Kodim the Mincha, because the Korban Mincha was always brought prior to the Mincha sacrifice, right? V'docha Ma'amud Asomachloi, and therefore it, you know, it pushes aside the Ma'amud that was close to it, right? And now the question is, do we read below Shel Nilo, but it doesn't push aside Nilo, or not? This we have to see. Okay? And Kachoy Rabbi Yeshua Doresh, Rabbi Yeshua learned from the Torah that the implication is Korban Musaf Ein B'Mincha, that there is no Korban Musaf at Mincha. That, in other words, if you bring a Korban Musaf, then you don't have a Ma'amud in Mincha. And it says, V'tamor Meforish Gemara. Gemara will explain the reason why. And finally, we have, you know, the remainder over here is Zman Atzei Kohanim VeHa'am, Shemisnad Bim Eitzim, says the time when Kohanim and people who would voluntarily offer up wood, you know, there were nine of these periods, right? Tisha, the Elo HaTes Manim, these nine times.
Excuse me, Misnadim means...
Misnadim means volunteer.
Mr. Nadvim,
right? They would offer up, you know, it's from the word the davar, but you know, I don't mean a davar that you, you know, you give a couple of dollars to the shulach.
Okay.
I mean that you actually, you know, you offer up something, mm-hmm. Because what does the Torah say? It says Kolish Hashem Nodvar Rucho. Any person, you know, whose spirit moved him, you know, to be generous. You see. So that's what they mean. So people would offer, give an offering of wood too. So Tisha, there were nine such occasions. Be'elo ha'tesmanim, or yu'akonim, or misnadim, v'hovi eitzim. Right? They would volunteer to bring wood. V'hoyu makrivim korban osu hayom, and they would also sacrifice that particular day. V'afilo hoyu eitzim harbe'elo ma'arocha, and even though there was a lot of wood around for the altar, the ma'arocha means that they would put it on the altar because yorach olecha kohen, that the kohen had set it on there, right? So hoyu elam is not in madgriven the elu tishas manim. Nevertheless, they would volunteer and bring, the wood offering on these nine occasions. Bnei orach ben Yehuda shekeshaolu bnei agola. When the people came back from Babylonian exile, heim hisnadbu techila, b'yechod b'nissan. They were the very first to offer themselves willingly that they were going to supply the wood, right? And that happened to be the first day of Nissan. So the sipek lehen ate them, and they offered enough wood, it says, ad kaf b'tamis, until the 20th day of Tamis. Shisnadbu b'nei David, because at that time, then who voluntarily brought it was the sons of David, Orach Shmuel, Bnei David, Orach Shmuel. Okay, three people actually. Meshevet Yehuda, or maybe he had all these three names. I don't know. Bnei David, Orach Shmuel. All right, whatever. Meshevet Yehuda Hoya, and he was a member of the tribe of Yehuda. And finally, who were the Bnei David? It was Mishpachas David HaMelech. In other words, they were descendants of the family of King David. And Sanor ben Binyamin, who was Zatu ben Yehuda, Bnei Gomri Ali, Bnei Kotzi Ketzios. It says, Mishpacha Achasen. According to Rashi, they were all the same family, with a lot of names. The Gemara Mepore Shammai Mikra Hachi. And the Gemara is going to explain why they were called that. And then finally we had Bnei Adin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who was Be'echod B'teves, on the first day of Teves, Shibo Bnei Paro Shnia, the sons of Parosh, they brought on the second day of the Gemara Meforesh, Amai Kovo Lehen Eila Asman. And the Gemara will explain why the different days were assigned to these people. And then the last thing on the Rashi over there, he says, Be'echod B'teves, on the first day of Teves, Shehoya Rosh Chodesh V'chanaka, someone who was Rosh Chodesh V'chanaka, and also they brought Korban Eitzim and everything, so he couldn't have a Mamed at all, because they were so busy all day long with services, and with sacrifices, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now I think we'll stop at this point and continue next week, as I said, with the remainder of the Mishnah and get into the Gemara, because the next part of the Mishnah deals with Shavuos and Matamis, Tisha B'Av, and the 15th day of Av.
Okay, so it's December 28th, 1994.
Yeah, right, so we'll meet
and
next
we're on
year.
Now
next year on Wednesday night at 7:30 as usual.
We're now on Chav Vav, Omed Aleph.
Right. Copyright that.
At the bottom of the page, second line from the bottom. Naturally in the Hebrew text, not in the English text.
Right.
You can stop complaining.
Buy one of his books. You won't have to. You'll have the space.
All right. The Mishnah now continues by telling us, Chamisha Devorim Irus Habasena Mishivos Betamis VeChamisha Betishava, that there are five disastrous events, or calamities, or whatever you want to call it, that occurred, that happened to our ancestors on the 17th of Tammuz, and five also that happened on Tisha B'Av. Okay? And now the Mishnah is going to explain what were these. Okay? So, the Shivos of Tammuz, the following calamities happened on the 17th of Tammuz. First of all, Nishtabru Haluchos. Shtabru Haluchos means that the tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu carried down from Mount Sinai were broken on that particular day. Okay? How they figure it out, we'll see when we get to the proper page in the Gemara. Okay? But obviously it's based upon the fact, that in the Torah it's written that Moshe went up to Mount Sinai. How long? 40 days and 40 nights, right? And then he came down. So obviously if he went up on Shavuos, right, which is the sixth of Sivan, then when he came down 40 days later was, well, actually it's a question, did he go up on the sixth or on the seventh of Sivan? All right. But in any case, it works out that it's going to be the 17th of Tammuz. And he came down, he saw it, and he broke the lucha. So this was already a calamity for the people.
Sure.
Okay. This happened already in a somewhat later period, when they, it could either be the Greeks or the Romans.
You didn't actually translate the Vatel HaTomid.
I'll tell you what it means. Okay. Either the Greek authorities or the Roman authorities prohibited the daily sacrifice from taking place. Of course, there's another explanation that occurs to me at this particular point. If I'm also entitled to throw in my own two cents once in a while. Right. Okay. There is a story told in some other place in the Talmud about during the siege of Yerushalayim, you know. Originally it started off, I mean, by virtue, one of the events that led up to the rebellion against Rome was the fact that, you know, the question with the sacrifices. And the story is told in the Moreh Gittin, for example, that the Roman emperor, you know, sent Jews, because he felt he had been slighted at the dinner party. So it's a famous story. I mean, it's the, you know, one of the how something even like that, you know, that the people didn't behave menschlich with one another. So this led eventually to the destruction of Yerushalayim at the hands of Rome.
He suggested that he.
I mean, it's a famous story about Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So we have a story over there, you know, that they wanted to. The Roman emperor sent the sacrifices, I said, to Yerushalayim to see whether it would be accepted, and this guy went and he made a tiny blemish in a place where to the Romans this was not a disqualification, but to the Jews it was a disqualification. And, you know, the rabbis didn't know, should they do it for the sake, you know, of keeping peace with the Romans? And one of the authorities over there, his name was Chaya ben Avkulos, he objected to it and he said, nothing doing. Because you'll give the impression that if a person makes purposely a blemish in a sacrificial animal, then he deserves the death penalty, and if he doesn't really deserve the death penalty for that. So because of
his blemish?
No. Well, it was, it was Bar Kamsa. Okay, right. Who, he went to Rome to denounce the Jews. So he made it right, as, you know, the animal was brought back from Rome, so he made a blemish in it. So the result was, of course, you know, that the fighting took place, and of course, obviously, at one point, I mean, they no longer had an animal to sacrifice. Another story that we find in the Talmud, a different event, I mean, and this was that as a test to the Jews, what did they do? Instead of sending up, you know, during the siege of Yerushalayim, they began to run out of animals, so they had like a basket, you know, a pulley system, you know, to go down and to bring up, you know, to the wall, and so they substituted a pig, and of course, not only, I mean, was it something that obviously would not be sacrificed, but also says that the pig stuck out his feet as he was being carried up over there, and he struck the wall of Yerushalayim, and this was like the first breach in the wall of Yerushalayim. So Botel HaTomid, we don't know exactly when it happened, you know, that the daily sacrifice was stopped. In other words, they were no longer able to carry it on. But at any rate, according to Rashi, it simply says the big Gozra HaMalchus Gezerim L'Hakivay, because the authorities, whether it was the Greek or the Romans, as I say, Rashi is not, it doesn't tell us over here, but he says that they passed the decree that from this point on, Jews were prohibited from sacrificing anymore in the Beis HaMikdash. And of course, I don't have to tell you that in the Beis HaMikdash, the major part of the service was actually carrying on the sacrifices over there, because it was on behalf of all the people of Israel. So we already had many occasions to discuss it. Okay? All right. What else? The Hukka Ho'ir. This happened, of course, in the days of the siege of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. And a similar event happened again in Roman times, when the army under Vespasian and then Titus and so on, you know, they made the breach in the wall, which permitted, you know, the Roman soldiers or the Greek soldiers, the Babylonian soldiers, you know, to enter, you know, to get into the city and begin hand-to-hand fighting with the inhabitants, you know, house by house, street by street, until finally the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Sorach Apostomus is HaTorah. Who this Apostomus is, I don't know, but of course his name is Greek, as you can see. And so he burnt the Torah on this particular day on Shavuot HaBetamis. Of course, all these things happened at different times on Shavuot HaBetamis. I mean, don't think that all happened just at one time. But these are all different events that happened on this particular day. V'hem Yitzelem B'Heichol, and he also, he placed an idol in the Beis HaMikdash. Just we know, of course, happened in the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, you know, that they did it. So presumably the Greek governor, you know, who ruled Eretz Israel at that particular time with the soldiers, so he is the one who set up the idol.
Telem doesn't mean Salem, does it?
It doesn't mean a cross over here, no. It means like a pestle, the same thing. It means an idol, okay? This is the same thing, yeah. Okay? So these were five different events that happened on Shavuot HaBetamis, and this is the reason why this day became one of the fast days, okay? B'Tisha B'Av, on the ninth day of Av, what were some of the disastrous events that took place over there? Of course, the Mishnah mentions five. Modern times, we've had many more that we could add to it, okay? On Tisha B'Av, first of all, Nigzar L'Avitzenu Shel Yikon Tzu La'aretz, okay? The decree was made by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that the generation that had left Egypt would not be able to enter Eretz Israel. It happened on Tisha B'Av. Yes.
Do you know how that was calculated offhand?
Do I know what?
How that was, that date was calculated offhand.
Okay. Again, they figure out. Okay. Moses sent the spies out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how many days were the spies gone? They were gone for 40 days. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they were all... So they were...
They were gone for 40 days, okay?
But how do we know which state they were sent to?
No, okay. Well, this is a tradition.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. When they came back, uh-huh. Remember, what did they do?
They said that we can't live there.
Right. They said that we cannot conquer these people, right? And what was the effect upon the people of Israel?
They all want to go home.
They all right. Ha'om ba'layla ha'hu, right? It's written over there that the nation, the entire people over there, wept that particular night. And so therefore, as the tradition has it, you know, that we'll read the Gemara, and of course as Rashi has it in commentary to the Chumash and so on and so forth, that, you know, Atem b'chisem b'chi chinam, you know, you wept when there was no reason for it, because the Rabbeinu Shel Olam had promised, you know, that they would be able to conquer the land, so that, you know, they should not have lost their faith in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's ability to carry out his promise. But since you did it without any good reason, therefore, you will have the chila doris. In other words, this day will become a day when you will have good reason, you know, to weep in generations to come. So this was one of the great disasters that happened on Tisha B'Av. Bechorav Habayis Borishenu Vashniya. And the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, both the first second of the first temple and also the second temple. What else? The Nilkato Beitar. Beitar was a city that held out in the time of the war against Rome by Bar Kokhba, and it was the last stronghold, you know, to finally be destroyed. And it contained many brave, pious people, and so therefore when Beitar fell, it happened to be on Tisha B'Av also, and therefore this is another one of the things that happened. Okay? And not only that, V'nechrisha ha'ir. The Romans passed an ordinance, you know, Titus, actually this already would also refer as well to after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash by Hadrian, the suppression of the revolt of Bar Kokhba and the institution of the Hadrianic persecution, okay, caused by the Emperor Hadrian. So they plowed the city and poured salt on it in order to make sure that it would never again flourish, never again be rebuilt. This is how the Romans treated a city that they hated and that they hoped would never again be able to rise, okay? They did the same thing, for example, centuries before that in Carthage, right? But, you know, when Carthage was finally destroyed after all the Punic Wars that they had, so they did the same thing.
First, Beitar now is a flourishing.
Pardon me?
Beitar now is a flourishing place.
Yeah, well, the Jews who have settled again, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and of course, Yerushalayim, I don't have to tell you, it's a very flourishing community, right? I brought back some magazine, Jerusalem Report or something like that. You know that magazine?
Yes.
Oh, but they have a couple of vile articles against the Haredim in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I have it on
the Near East Report
there, but, huh?
The Near East Report?
No. This is called Jerusalem Report. It's a magazine that comes out every 2 weeks. I don't know whether it has an official sponsor or if it's a private deal, but whatever it is, it was violently anti what they call the Haredi or the so-called ultra-Orthodox. Violent in its treatment of him. Now, the Mishnah continues with Mishanichnas Av, when Av begins, literally when it enters, when Av begins, Mimatin the Simcha, then you cut down on joyous events. It doesn't say that you stop Simchas altogether, but it does say that you cut down. This is what the Mishnah has to say, okay? And then Shabbos Shechol Tisha B'Av the Yos B'Seicha Osim Nesapil Mechabes. Here, Shabbos doesn't mean Shabbos, but it means the week, as it sometimes means.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
During the week in which Tisha B'Av occurs, then it is prohibited to take a haircut, okay? Naturally, shaving is also included, like in Sapir. Umelechabes are also prohibited from doing laundry, right? But, says the Mishnah, V'chamisha mutum nekvod HaShabbos. But on Thursday, even though it is within this week prior to Tisha B'Av, it is still permissible to do these things that we said you're not allowed to, in other words, to take a haircut or to do laundry, you know, or to do whatever else may be necessary in order to honor the Shabbos. Okay. Now, we already see that from the Mishnah, some of the practices that we observe today are even more stringent than what this is. There is a difference in practice between the Sephardim and between the Ashkenazim. The Ashkenazim are more machbir in this particular case, to do in general, more than what the Mishnah demands, whereas the Sephardim tend in general to stick to the rules that we have laid down in the Mishnah over here as far as what do you do, you know, as far as Simchas and so on is concerned. For example, here they're talking about the week of Tisha B'Av. You know that among the Ashkenazim, we do not perform any weddings, beginning with Shavuos HaBet Hamas, right through the end of Tisha B'Av, okay? don't perform any weddings during that time. The Sfarim don't have that custom. Sfarim will perform up to Rosh Chodesh. In other words, after the Shavuos of Thomas, they'll still continue during the month of Thomas to celebrate weddings. So this is one of the differences in interpretation, you know, between one group and the other.
I'm having a little problem with the idea of it being wrong to launder your clothes. I can understand not changing your clothes, but actually washing clothes, I don't really understand why that's a prohibition.
The basic prohibition of, you know, of laundering is so that you should not be, have, you know, you shouldn't deck yourself out in your finery. In other words, it's a sign of mourning. It's a sign of mourning.
But nowadays, nowadays I throw washing the washing machine.
We understand
and
that.
So, I mean,
but still, you know that people who observe will not do laundry.
No, I can understand not changing your clothes.
Right.
You know, if you're at home, not changing your clothes, etc., etc.
With the exception, I mean, infants' garments or something like that, they get soiled all the time, so that would be permissible to do. But as a general rule, we don't, okay?
If you're an oval and you don't change your clothes, I can see that, and I can see I can see not changing your clothes, not laundering the clothes. I'm having difficulty.
I don't have to tell you that when it comes to these private observances, what is the, shall we say, what is the official line, and then what do people do in case of a necessity? You know, let's say they don't have anything clean, everything is absolutely dirty, and they have nothing else to wear. No, in that case, like a shayla. But in any case, if you're going to launder, it has to be done bitsinas, we would say. It should be done
discreetly.
Exactly. Thank you. Okay, and not done, publicly.
Openly.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't hang your dirty laundry in public.
Right. Okay.
Good point.
Now, the Mishnah continues to say,
if I didn't say it, he would have said it.
Right, okay. Erev Tisha B'Av, on the eve of Tisha B'Av, lo yochal odem shnei tavshilim. The person should not eat two cooked dishes. Then it says, lo yochal bosor v'lo yishtei yayin. Also, Erev Tisha B'Av, you are not to eat meat and you're not to drink wine. Okay. Now, needless to say, among the Ashkenazim, what is our practice?
Never said it.
The whole 9 days.
Beginning, exactly. With the 9 days, we don't eat any meat and we don't drink any wine, with the exception of Shabbos.
Shabbos
is permissible because it's an honor of Shabbos that we can do it. I mean, just as it said before, Mipnei Kvod HaShabbos. So, this basic concept would apply over here also. Okay? That in honor of Shabbos, we do drink wine and we do eat meat, but otherwise we don't. We observe. But again, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the law applies only to Erev Tisha B'Av. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Yishana. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, you make some change in your eating habits. Now, what exactly is it? So the Gemara will explain it afterwards. If you're used, let's say, three vegetables with the main course, so you eat only two vegetables. Or if you have two vegetables, then you eat only one vegetable, whatever it may be. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, make some change in order to show that you're entering this period of mourning, okay? But it does not prohibit, for example, eating vegetables. But you should not really, eat more than you normally would, because this is not in the spirit of Tisha B'Av. You know, to a certain extent, psychologically, there's a difference between Yom Kippur and between Tisha B'Av, even though both of them, we know, are fasts, which start, before sunset and continue until after sunset on the following day. And we know also that many of the prohibitions that occur that are observed on Tisha B'Av are also observed on Yom Kippur. Not completely, though. I mean, some of the things, of course, that we are prohibited to do on both occasions, is achilo shasiyah, we're not allowed to eat, we're not allowed to drink, right? And then nilas asandal, we're not allowed to wear leather shoes, right? Tashmish hamita, which means, that you're not allowed to have any marital intercourse, okay? Sicha, which means you shouldn't anoint yourself with oil, which they did in those days, in order to smell fragrant and also to remove filth. But if it's only for medicinal purposes, let's say you have a rash that requires it, then it's permitted to do it. But this is what we would say, sikha shaltanim, that, you know, just for enjoyment, so if you feel good, this would be prohibited also. So these are things that, you know, they share together.
You're allowed to take medication? Yes.
Medication, if you are, you know, a person who is quite ill, in that case you should ask a shada as to whether you should or you shouldn't, okay? Well, that law would apply both to Yom Kippur and to Tisha B'Av.
The ointment or any medication? I'm sorry.
The ointment is only external. It's not the internal.
You're asking about
asking about medication. Yeah,
oral
medication.
That's
but again, oral medication. I mean, this has nothing to do with the sikha part of it. It has to do with eating and drinking. As to whether it's, you know, you could, if you're permitted to break the fast, so to speak, through this, and yet at the same time be considered as fasting. Now, obviously, if a person is very sick, he should ask the shaylan and find out what to do. As for example, a person may be permitted under those circumstances to drink, okay? But don't drink, you know, a great big glass or something like that. Take it a little sip at a time, a little sip at a time, or something like that. So, you know, that it's, you're making this shinui. You're aware of the fact that it is a fast day. You're doing it only because you have to preserve your good health, okay?
Yeah.
Right, it's pikuach nefesh in this particular case. So, you know, the best thing is always to ask a shayla about, you know, what you're permitted to do and what you're not permitted to do on this occasion. But I started to say that in spite of the fact that all these rules pertain to Tisha B'Av as well as the Yom Kippur, but still there is quite a difference between the two. Obviously, Yom Kippur is a day upon which we are praying and we spend it the day in prayer and tshuva and everything else. And but at the same time, as we'll see, it's considered a day of simcha as well. And what is part of the simcha of Yom Kippur? The fact that we are confident in our heart that our prayers will be answered by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and he will grant us mechila, you know, he will grant us pardon for the sins that we commit, and so on and so forth. So that, therefore, Erev Yom Kippur, there is no restriction as to how much food you can eat. Now, it's understandable. I mean, there's some people, if they overeat, they're not going to feel good. I remember I had one case, 1 year, I was invited to eat out, you know, Erev Yom Kippur. I was invited to one of the most pious professors at the seminary because I was the chazan for Yom Kippur services. And, you know, right after that we had to go to the shul to say Nila. Well, I was fed so much.
Kol Nidra.
Yeah, for Kol Nidra, right. I was fed so much that really I didn't feel good when I had to say Kol Nidra.
You didn't have to eat it.
Everybody else was. I didn't want to shame them. After all, the person for whom I had the greatest respect, you know, both for him and his wife and so on, it would have felt funny. Okay. So, this taught me a lesson. Don't overeat Erev Yom Kippur.
But you are supposed to eat.
But you still, you have to eat. Yes, you have to eat because Erev Yom Kippur is considered, you know what it says, that you have to eat on the ninth day of Tishrei. In other words, Erev Yom Kippur, it's considered a mitzvah just like the fasting on the tenth is considered. Right. Reasons for it? Well, one of them is, of course, to build you up so to be able to take the fast. Well, okay. But psychologically, there may be another reason, namely that if you eat Erev Yom Kippur and then you fast on Yom Kippur, you'll appreciate the difference between the fact that you're permitted to eat and the fast will seem that much more rigorous to you because after all the good things, you know, you remember and you know that you can't partake, so you do watch you or something like that because of that.
But on Tisha B'Av, aren't you allowed to work, let's say, after the half day?
Okay, this is already a different story. We'll come to it as we reach
Yom Kippur,
that.
You're not allowed to work.
Right, of course. Yom Kippur, I don't have to tell you, it's a day, right, it's a Shabbat, Shabbaton, right, the Sabbath of Sabbath. And certainly, no malacha is permitted to be done on this particular day. Okay. With Tisha B'Av, if you can refrain from doing work, it's considered a mitzvah. Consider a mitzvah. Only if it's absolutely necessary should you work on that day, And if it can be arranged at all, you shouldn't do it until after Chatzos, in other words, after midday. Mm-hmm. Okay? But we'll come to that when we yeah. reach that particular point.
Can I go back to my laundering yes. question again?
No.
I'm thinking about the clothing, and during Sephira, we don't put on new clothes, as it were.
Well, you don't buy new clothes. Well, it's not that you don't put it on. You don't buy new clothes, but you're certainly permitted to wear new clothes that you have.
Okay, if you have to. Sure, I mean, you don't go...
It's not prohibited.
You'd think that this would be the equivalent. I mean, isn't this a serious Sephira, this 9-day period? We're not eating meat.
Well, in Sephira, I mean, why are we observing? Also because of the fact, you know, that we're mourning, you know, for what happened, the terrible things, namely during the time of the Kofara, you know, his pupils died.
I'm saying, which is more of a sacrifice, to not buy clothes or to not launder clothes?
Is more definitely. I mean, during Sephira, you're certainly permitted to launder your clothing. There's no problem with that. So even if you don't buy something new, but you still, I mean, you can wear something.
So during the 9 days, apparently, if you want to, you buy something new, no big deal. Instead of washing your clothes, it doesn't say we may not.
No, I mean, it doesn't prohibit it either, correct. But so, I mean, this is already, you know, David, you have to understand one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What the Mishnah is saying has been modified as generations go on, by virtue of the fact, you know, that people want to be even stricter than what the Mishnah is, because they want to feel even more the seriousness of the tragedies that befell the people of Israel, and to give added significance to this period of time.
In the Mishnah, did it tell us not to buy clothes during Sephira?
No, it's not mentioned at all.
That's a modern thing then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
I mean, modern.
Yeah, but... Okay.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I mean, this is an interpretation based upon... But there's nothing in the Mishnah that speaks about Sephira. Nothing at all. It's only later, you know, that this became associated with the period of mourning, so therefore we already find it, you know, in codes, you know, that, you know.
Sephira, yeah.
You should check with Dr.
All right. Anyway, getting back over here, so as we say, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel apparently only feels that when it comes to the meal Erev Tisha B'Av, Yishana, in other words, make some change whereby you you don't eat as much or something like that. You make a change, okay. But again, as I say, you know, the rules became a little bit more strict. But one of the basic rules is about, you know, that is not to eat two cooked dishes. Now, what are we talking about? So later on, we'll discover, I mean, that when we discuss Tisha B'Av a little bit greater length, you know, that this applies to what we call the Suda Mafsekas.
Suda
Mafsekas. In other words, the concluding meal just prior to the fast, okay? But earlier in the day, for example, it would be permitted to have two cooked dishes, because there's no prohibition against that. It's only at the Suda Mafsekas that you're not allowed to do it. Okay? Yeah. Now, the next thing, Rabbi Yehuda Mechaye Bichvia Samito. Rabbi Yehuda also felt, and he said that we should require that you turn the bed upside down. The beds that they had in those days, you know, they were able, in other words, to put it right, to make it vertical instead of horizontal, okay? Because they used ropes, pulleys, and things like that, okay? So he felt that inasmuch as this is the day of mourning, and this is one of the rules that we find in the Gemara and Moed Katan, in reference to how do you observe mourning, so we felt that the same thing should apply to Tisha B'Av. But it says over here clearly that v'lo hodu lo chachamim, but the sages disagreed with him. They did not agree that this had to be done. Mourning for, you know, a korov, yes, but here, no. Of course, we don't observe that at all today, because our beds are different, and so that's one of the things, you know, that went by the board. Okay. Yes, David?
Well, maybe it is, you know, if we're not observing it, maybe it isn't. Well, I was just curious as to what exactly they did, what the procedure was. You say they made their bed vertical? Was it 90 degrees vertical?
Right. In other words, something or other, they turned it over so that it was not horizontal, okay? This is in order that they should not be able to sleep comfortably. Maybe they put it on an incline or something. I don't know exactly what. All it says is that they turned it over, that's all. Okay.
It's
yeah.
Like a Murphy bed.
Yeah.
And a sleep in a closet.
Right, the Murphy bed, exactly. Okay. All right.
It was Morris, but it might be the call.
Omer Rabin Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said, Lehoyu yomim tevim liyisrael kachamishosu biyov v'chiyom ha-kippur. He says, the greatest, the most joyful holidays that the people of Israel had, you didn't have such other joyful holidays as the 15th day of Av and as Yom Kippur. Now, what made them so joyful? So the Mishnah continues and says, Shabbahem benos Yerushalayim yotzes b'chlei lovon she'ulin shelo yivayish es mi she'enu. On these days, the daughters of Jerusalem would go out wearing white garments which were borrowed in order not to embarrass one who did not have a white garment, okay? In other words, they purposely, you know, one girl would borrow garments from another and so on and so forth, so that even the poorest girl would have the white robe, you know, the white dress or something like that, you know, to go out on that particular day. And then what happened? Yes. And also says, Kol HaKelim Tunan Tevilah, which means all these garments had to be Tevil, they had to be immersed in the mikveh beforehand. Why? To make sure, you know, that the garment that they had borrowed had not been become Tomei, you know, through either menstruation or maybe contact with something else, you know, that would render it unclean. So therefore, they were all dipped into the mikveh. And then after that, you know, they, I guess they're allowed to dry first.
Yeah.
And then lent to the girl who wanted, you know, who asked for it. Well, the Noz Yerushalayim, pardon me?
Nothing.
Well, the Noz Yerushalayim and his daughters of Jerusalem, Yotzos, they would go out, the Cholos Pakromim, they would dance in the vineyards. In those days, you know, Yerushalayim had vineyards all around it. So they would go out to the vineyards and they would go out and they would dance over there. Mahoya Omros, and what would they say during the time that they were dancing? They said, Bocher. English translation?
Bocher.
Young man.
Young man. Bocher means unmarried man.
Right. Sono Edecho, Ure Mato Berilacha. It says, raise your eyes, they would say, and see what you're choosing for yourself. Al Titein Enecho Benoi. Don't pay attention to beauty, but rather pay attention, you know, look for the yichus, the family relationship that, you know, that we come from. Because it is written, of course, you know, Eishes Chayil, if you remember, Sheker Achein, the Hevel HaYoifi, that grace is deceitful and beauty is vain. Isho Yeras Hashem, Hisis Halol, but a woman who fears God, she is the one to be praised. V'yoymer, and then the pasuk continues and it says, "Tenu lo mepri yodeho," let give her, in other words, praise her for the fruit of her hands. In other words, whatever she does, the halleluha b'ashur maaseh, and let her deeds praise her in the gates. In other words, take a look and see, judge the girl not on the basis of beauty, but judge her on the basis of who her family is and what her character is.
This implies that you can't get beauty and character together. I mean, why can't you get beauty and character together?
So later on, we'll learn the Gemara, we'll see that they don't actually rule out beauty. But what they're stressing over here is that beauty is not necessarily the prime desirable characteristic, shall we say, of the young lady. That they shouldn't look just for beauty, okay? But nevertheless, they do.
A mitzvah to marry
an ugly
girl.
Come to the Gemara. Huh? Well, yeah, all right. No, ugly girls also.
A mitzvah to marry an ugly girl, so nobody else
will
look at
her. Why not? Absolutely.
I see.
This is going on tape, you know.
What's wrong with that?
Take it home with you. Excuse me.
There is a Gemara, to that effect. It's a story about the rabbi, you know, who purposely married an ugly wife. Why? Because he saw, you know, that other people, no other man wanted to look at her. So he felt it was a mitzvah to marry her. And it doesn't mean that they had an unhappy life together. So they had a happy life together, okay? He was performing mitzvahs all the time with her, okay?
And ugly children.
Well, we'll see a little bit later when we get to the end of the parak, you know, as we're getting ready to finish, is how the Gemara elaborates upon the Mishnah over here.
Good.
Yes, David.
Just to get slightly off the subject here, where it says, Shechar Kachin v'chevel ha'yofi. Okay.
Yeah.
Isha Yireth Hashem. Now, this is what he...
Tit halal.
Okay, so this is like a heap prayer. Yeah, so
yeah, right,
she will exactly.
She is to be praised. No, that's what I'm asking you.
You're making question. Okay.
Okay. While we normally think of hip pael as being reflexive, but in reality, even as in some of the other languages, the reflexive could also sometimes be taken as a passive.
Okay,
as
well. Fine. Okay. Good. Okay.
I would say, for example, it's Ebit Payer. It doesn't mean necessarily this explains itself. It means that this can be explained or something like that. Okay?
Okay.
So, Ita Talal, she is the one who deserves to be praised. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. And we have another pasuk. V'cheinu Omer, and likewise it says, Tse'enu re'enu b'don siyam b'mel shtomo. Go out and see, O daughters of Zion, King Solomon. Take a look and see the crown that his mother put on his head on the day that he got married, and also on the day of his rejoicing. Now, the implication over here would be, what? That this is tied in with the preceding, you know, because of the basis of the marriage idea, right? In other words, they're saying, you know, O daughters of Zion, take a look at King Solomon. In other words, in this case, you know, let's say the chosen or something like that, who is to be compared to a king, and see the glorious crown, you know, that his mother puts on him the day that he gets married and so on. However, Chachamim have a different taich. They have a different explanation. They apply it differently. What do they apply it to? He says, V'yom chasunaso, this refers to the people of Israel. And who is Bamelech Shloimo then? To get back to the line above, who is King Solomon? The answer is, this is the Rebbeinu Shleilim. This is the Rebbeinu Shleilim, they say. Why do they say that the Rebbeinu Shleilim is called King Solomon, Melech Shloimo? Because they say, HaMelech Shehasholom Shalom. Okay? This is the king from whom, who is the source of all peace. Okay? So this is the Rebbeinu Shleilim. And then in that case, the very first of the Rebbeinu Shleilim, so what is B'yom Chasunaso? What is the day of his marriage? The answer is Zeh Matan Torah. In other words, we place it in the, shall we say, that we make a comparison between the giving of the Mount, the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai to the people of Israel, as if the people of Israel became wedded to the Rebbeinu Shleilim on this day through the gift of the Torah. Okay, remember there used to be an old Yiddish song. Back when people used to know Yiddish songs, all right, and said, the Ebishter is the Mechutin, right, and the Torah is the Kala, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the Shatchan Gedan. So it's a little different than what we have over here, but still the basic idea is that it's as though the people of Israel were married to the Rebbeinu Shleilim through the gift of the Torah.
So
okay?
The implication that Israel is the ugly bride.
Shalom.
Come on, think about how bad it's been. I mean, they turned their back on God.
Oh, well, that doesn't have to be right.
Did. Look at all the things we did.
Okay, now I understand what you're referring to.
That's what I'm referring to. That's what I'm referring to.
You're right. Unfortunately,
we rebelled. We do it.
Right.
We were bad.
Absolutely right.
We did all the things that one shouldn't do.
And yet the saving grace of the people of Israel, that even those who are empty of, you know, observance, still are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin.
Okay.
They compare the people of Israel to a pomegranate. Pomegranate is full of seeds. Okay? It's based upon a pasuk also in Shoreshim, Tifelo Karimon Rakoseh. Okay. So what do they say? Karimon Rakoseh. Rimon, you know, is the Hebrew word, which means pomegranate. Okay? So, Rak or Seich, they take, not in the sense, you know, like, it's exactly the question, what does it mean? Some say it means the brow or something like that, okay? But they take it from the word reik. In other words, empty. And the Gemara says, right? Or even those who are empty among them, in other words, those who don't observe to the same extent as, you know, the more pious do, but are also, it says that they too are Malayim mitzvos kerimon. They are also filled with mitzvos, even just as a pomegranate is filled with seeds. In other words, the nature of the Jew is that even if he's not observant 100%, but he has, as we would say, a Yiddish heart, and he wants to help others and do mitzvahs for other people and so on. So, you know, or as the Gemara characterizes us someplace else. Yeah, yeah, I know what you're referring to. You're absolutely right. The Jewish history is replete with, you know,
unfortunately,
backsliding, and you know, and then they're not doing exactly what God has commanded us to do. There's no question. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
If a man is unlearned, doesn't know anything, that doesn't mean he's on a low spiritual level. He could be higher than a row.
Well, of course, I mean, you could.
All right, let's go.
What is Yom Simcha? All right, the Yom Simcha Slibo,
right,
and the day of the rejoicing, literally when his heart rejoices. What does this refer to? So the Mishnah continues and says, Zeh Binyan Beis HaMikdash. This is the day when the Beis HaMikdash is built. And Sheyibonu B'meira Yomeinu, and may it be rebuilt speedily in our own lifetime. Right, exactly. Yeah. Why not? It certainly goes back to Abraham Avinu, right? And we, after all, follow in the footsteps of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You know, each one has his own particular virtues that you know, he exemplified that we should innately feel, you know, and exemplify in our own life. All right. Now, finally, after we finish the Mishnah, so the Gemara now is going to take it and analyze it phrase by phrase. The first thing was that it said, right? That there are three different types of occasions during the course of the year